spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Well, folks, looks like we're going to have a season after all. A legit season full of contrast and competition, all in place of the four-month coronation parade we likely expected after September opened with an overhyped hurricane. Now, that's a Miami hurricane, not Ida. Ida actually was appropriately hyped. And that is how another Saturday, a second consecutive Saturday, I felt like Alabama lost. Instead of actually pacing college football with a 3-0 record, an outstanding reputation that's actually good enough to set another weak perch atop the rankings. Saturday's showing against the Florida Gators was both troubling and illuminating, frustrating and potentially groundbreaking. For his own part, post-game Saban was equally contrarian, laughing with CBS's Jamie Erdahl, smirking during the presser, complimenting Mullen and the Gators, and praising his team. Meanwhile, Alabama fans were left filling in their own blanks. D's Gators, D's play calls, D's missed tackles, and D's missed blocks. As for me, I struggle with the contrast as much as anybody. Playing in front of a historically large and charged swamp, Alabama did show resolve and grit, and did legit earn a valuable road game in a tough building in a tough conference. Hey, the swamp is tough to play in under any circumstances. This was an extra challenging, historically large crowd, historically charged event. This was a tougher venue than what we would expect to see in a typical game in the swamp, so to speak, and certainly a typical SEC road game. But I also watched the team hack up a 21-3 lead, lose three quarters of play, yield a 99-yard touchdown drive to an otherwise underwhelming quarterback, get beat along both lines of scrimmage, and narrowly escaped with a tarnished W. I want to say this game proves what we already know, like the 2014 Arkansas game, the 2015 Ole Miss game, or even the 2020 Ole Miss game. Winning SEC games is hard, and sometimes the win can come dressed as a loss. Did Saturday do more to expose or reveal the tide? I don't know yet, but look, here's what we do know. Jumping in on the offensive side of the ball, we know that Bryce Young continues to develop, but he's proven that he has what it takes. By no stretch of the imagination is Bryce perfect. He's not even Tua or Mac. But his stat line, 22 of 35 for 240, was good. His 6.9-yard average is pedestrian. His three touchdowns, now, hey, that's really good. It could have been four, could have been five, but he had three. Three is a really good number, especially starting his third game and his first game on the road, and we've talked about the venue. But if you look at his stat line, what really stands out is amazing on his stat lines, all things considered, zero turnovers in Saturday's conditions is absolutely outstanding. Now, watching the game, a lot of things come to mind, but one thing resonates loud and clear. Clearly, Bryce is instructed not to run the ball. The TD where he threw it to Cam and Cam just happened to land 1 foot out of bounds, as opposed to if he had landed first on his other foot, it would have been a touchdown. Clearly, Bryce could have and should have run that in for a touchdown. That ended up being a four-point swing in a two-point game. That's the material differential there. But that is so much easier to coach out of. Actually, it's much easier to coach into Bryce than it is to coach out of his game. Coaching running out of Jalen Hurts wasn't going to happen. Coaching running into Bryce in select situations, such as like you can reach out and taste the goal line, go ahead and run that in. Let's not jeopardize the ball putting it in. And now we have an example of what can happen, especially that close to the sidelines. Not that Cam did anything wrong, but and not really that Bryce did anything wrong. He just could have done a little bit better in running that into the end zone himself. I enjoyed his inside shuffle to Cam, another play to Cam on another drive. I thought that was creative. I thought that was clever. I think that speaks to his sticking with a play. And actually, I think that's harder to teach. He has that conceptual understanding of where to go to the ball, that with the ball. That's harder to teach. The fact that he threw the ball for what would have been a touchdown, it's not a bad play. The running just would have been better. And in the shuffle to Cam, the creativity that demonstrated, the awareness, sort of the wherewithal, the sticking with the play, that's phenomenal. And it's that's what's harder to coach into the player. And so I think Bryce is going to continue to develop later this season, this next season, throughout his career. We're going to see those subtle differences where he's executing with a little more precision, a little more perfection, if you will, in his game. This is small, but I really enjoyed his greeting his teammates going into the locker room. And the TV camera just sort of framed it up. It's something you may not have even noticed and wouldn't have noticed if the TV didn't capture it just so. But he was where they were in the field and where the play ended going into half. He was very close with a handful of teammates to just run up the ramp and go into the locker room. And he started to do that. He started to go up the ramp and he stopped and he turned around and he just stuck both arms out and started giving high fives and patting his guys. Some of those guys were the players that literally had been on the field with him just seconds earlier. And some of those were the teammates that were coming across the field to go into the locker room. It's subtle. It's not that big of a deal, but it was enough that he is demonstrating that he wants to be perceived as a leader, not in a sort of cheesy kind of way, but he wants to sort of embrace his teammates. And so I thought that was a good visual. I liked and appreciated that. I think this kid, I think Bryce, I think he has what we want, and I think he has what he need. What we need. Now, there's a couple of things that happened offensively. And look, it's not Bryce's fault, but I think as he steps into greater leadership, he can have voice with the team and he can influence these types of outcomes. Alabama had three consecutive three and outs, and that's after scoring on three consecutive drives. That stinks. That's not how this works. Alabama had 3 yards in the entire second quarter. That's not how this works. And then Alabama had 10 points across the second, third, and fourth quarters of the game. And in fact, lost, if you will, if you're keeping score, lost 3 quarters of the game. That's not how this works at Alabama. It's not how it's going to work at the quarterback position. I think Bryce is a character, a player that can help us turn that around. So we don't see that, even in big games against big opponents. We can turn that around. I think everyone is responsible. I'm not putting the mantle of this exclusively on Bryce, but as he grows into that leadership position, I think he can have sort of an outsized proportional influence. I think this is a mess that needs to be cleaned up. As Saban indicated last week, when things stink, they stink for everyone. And really 3 quarters of the game in that regard, they really sort of stunk up the joint in that regard. And there's an opportunity to improve that. And I think Bryce can play a role there. All right. Speaking of things stinking, we're going to move to the offensive line. And I've sort of progressively gone backwards, much in the way the offensive line has. I started by saying after week one, hey, it's not unsettled, but it's not yet settled. And I tried to sort of find an angle there. Last week, I said, no, that's an unsettled position. And this week, following the Florida game, the offensive line is just outright regressing. You know, I do want to give Florida some credit. I think they're one of the best defensive lines that we're going to see this season. However, this offensive line is going the wrong way. In a preseason show, and if you haven't listened to our preseason show, I think there's still a lot of value there. I would encourage you to check that out. In the preseason show, we sort of took on a topic that I've done in spring before, and it's a more fun topic in spring because it's more just sort of creative, imaginative, and I've done this before where, you know, we redraft the players that are departing from the prior year's team. If you think about, hey, what does this next year's team need? That if we could just keep one or two players from last year's team, who would we really want that to be? Well, everyone would say Mac and Najee and, you know, all of, you know, Devonta. And look, they would all have an interesting opportunity and roles within this team. But my sort of contrarian view or selection was Alex Leatherwood. Man, what if we could have Alex Leatherwood back on this team? In this game Saturday, and in fact, to this point in the season, but Saturday, golly, Saturday really sort of brought this to bear. What if this Alabama team had Alex Leatherwood at right tackle and Evan Neal at right tackle? How improved would the entire offense be? Bryce's performance would be better. The running back's performance would be better. The rest of the offensive line's performance would be better. The wide receiver's performance would be better. Think of taking shots down the field when the quarterback has time to let the plays to develop. That's a single player that would have sort of an oversized or outsized ripple effect across the entire offense. And in fact, if you really want to get crazy with it, three and outs, that wouldn't happen with Leatherwood in the game. And that would have assisted the defense as well. Instead of that, we have Chris Owens at right tackle. Now, listen, I love the kid. I've talked about this before. I've mentioned him on multiple podcasts under favorable light. But he lost his job at center. And on Saturday, he put on an outstanding audition for a role on the bench for the rest of the season. I think Owens Saturday against Florida was beat like a drum. And not like a little drummer boy, rom-pom-pom, you know, snare drum beating. No. He was beat like John Bonham's bass drum on an extended play of Moby Dick. He was whipped. I watched 79 for most of the game, most every play of the entire game. I watched 79, and his man almost always got pressure. Multiple times, tight ends were moved over. Multiple times, multiple tight ends were moved over. Motions to offset the blocking, pulling linemen. We did so much to orchestrate structure and infrastructure of line around Chris Owens that I think it took away from some of the offense. A lot of the motion, a lot of the sweeps, a lot of the running went to the left. Well, Saban likes to go to the right too. He likes to run to the right too. And I don't think that we did nearly as much of that because of the holes, the leaking line that we had there on the right side. I absolutely enjoy Chris Owens. I absolutely think he needs to be removed from the lineup until he gets something sorted out. My single biggest surprise of all of the things that happened Saturday, my single biggest surprise is that the Alabama staff did not rotate him out. Hands down. I don't care what you come at me with, the 100-yard, 99-yard touchdown, the score, a play, Slade dropping a ball. I don't care what you have. You don't have anything that is a bigger surprise to me than Chris Owens playing the entire game at right tackle. And look, I'm not piling on the guy any more than I had to watch that. And the team had to suffer through that. And a quarterback or a running back is going to get hurt. In fact, B-Rob got dinged up twice. Is it a result of that? No, probably not. But somebody's going to get hit. Somebody's going to get hurt if we're not blocking up front. Or we're just going to lose a game as a result. We're going to experience a turnover. We're going to experience Bryce getting hit as he's trying to throw the ball, and it's going to be a fumble or going to lead to an interception. These things happen. This is the nature of the game. It's a surprise to no one that I say this. Is it Kendall Rudolph? Is it DeAndre George? Is it J.C. Latham? I don't know. I'd put them all out there and give them a turn. Ultimately, I do think it's Latham, and I've been very, very consistent in that prediction. But I think we absolutely have to put someone else in that position. Their learning curve, anyone else's learning curve at that right tackle position right now is better than Owen's limitations at the position. I'm sorry, but it's true. I think it probably even impacted Emil Ekior. He was offsides a couple of times. if he knows he's going to get, if he has to do something to help the right tackle outside of him, then that's going to make him anxious in his play, because now he might feel like I've got my responsibilities and someone else's that I have to try to account for, or this whole side of the line is going to collapse. Is that why he was offsides a couple times? Is that why he had false starts? Is that why he missed his block a couple times? I don't know, but is there room for connective tissue there? Yes. Yes, I do believe that there is. Continuing on across the offense, I thought Cameron Latu and Jaleel Billingsley, I thought they played very, very well. It was good to see more wrinkles with them in the play, more lineups with them in there. I think they did have to motion to the right a lot, or line up on the right a lot, to slow down the rush over there. I think if we can solve for that, I think there's a world of wrinkle that we can bring into the offense, a lot of flavor that Alabama can bring into the offense with Cameron and Jaleel. And that's going to be super exciting to watch. But I do think it anchors back to the offensive line. Spoiler alert, that's going to be a theme as we continue through the offense. Running backs. Man, on one hand, I want to go full hats off to Brian Robinson. He rushed for 75 of Alabama's 91 rushing yards, and those numbers by themselves stink. But the fact that he had, and I should have put a percentage on that, what's that? 75, 80% of the Tide's rushing performance put up by a single player. The fact that it was only 75 of 91 is a little bit smelly there. He was dinged twice early in the game on a run. He looked like he just landed awkwardly on his foot, and he sort of hobbled off. He came back quickly after maybe the next series. He was back out on the field. And then later in the game, Saban said he sort of dinged his ribs, but he thought that he would be okay. But nonetheless, he was a workhorse. He ran hard, lowered his shoulder multiple times, and I know there was at least one key touchdown that he scored that Alabama certainly needed on a goal line situation. Jace, I thought, was very good, less running the ball, although he did run for some tough yards, but he was active receiving the ball. I think he had four catches, and so that's certainly something that he brings to the table. And I just think athletically, as a runner, we saw last year when he can sort of buy the corner. He seems a thicker running back, and we've talked about that, but I think he is really getting into the rotation, and I would consider him so sort of a co-number one, and I think the play thus far in the season has demonstrated that. Trey Sanders not playing, I just don't know what's going on there. There was a shot of him on the sideline, looked like he was sitting on an equipment trunk or something, and just looked thoroughly dejected. I don't know if that's because he had been told, hey, you're not going to get reps today, or we're going to keep you out of this game. It's a harder, more physical game, and you injury rehab. I don't know if it has something to do with that, or if something happened in the week of practice, and God, I hope this is not true, but something in the week of practice that they said, hey, we're going to hold you out from an injury perspective. I hope that's not true. I hope that maybe it was just the nature of the game plan, and we wanted the more sort of physical backs. I don't know. I just don't know. But Trey Sanders, he just has a dynamic punch. And I think I would love to have seen him even just on a couple of toss sweeps. Let's try to get him in some space and see what he can do. We've talked about he has like swivel hips, that he's very fluid. And I think he's a guy that I would have liked to have seen, you know, get four or five reps. I would have liked to have seen all of our running backs get, you know, six or seven or eight more carries. We seem to be more interested in trying to pass the ball. Not altogether a bad thing, but I think there was room to run, and I think we could have created some momentum in the running game. We've been rating our running backs sort of 1 to 3 based on what we've seen. The first two games, that's been fun. This game is not fun, you know, because we don't get to rate all three of them, and just because the running game was sort of subpar across the board. Clearly, I got to go with Brian Robinson with his production, his physicality, and then Jace is going to come in second by default. Again, that's not a knock on Jace. I thought he had an outstanding day, and they both contributed to scores. Ties back to the offensive line. Wide receivers, they never seem to really get rolling. Jameson had 4 for 61. There was a catch where it looked like he was just trying to shake free. He was on the sort of the left side of the field, the left side of the offense, and it felt like he was just trying to shake free. And if he could get into open space, just he was going to be able to turn on the jets. And he had like two strides where it looked like he was about to launch. And someone came and sort of swiped his foot out from under him. I really like to see him in space where he could make a move and then turn on the jets, because he's that kind of player. He came very close to doing that against Florida. And that would have been a really big touchdown had he been able to sort of stretch the field in that way and potentially get a score. I thought Mechie looked good, but not outstanding. He was 6 for 49. What we're seeing from Mechie, and I love when I make predictions and they're right, and sometimes I hate when I make predictions and they're right. One of the things that we asked is a question or is a watch item around Mechie is he's never been the number one guy. He's never been lined up against the top cornerback from an opponent. And Kyir Elam is a very good cornerback, especially locked up in man. And we seem to go to Mechie a lot. He had 6 receptions and he had some drops there as well. And what that means is that we were picking on their number one corner a lot. We were going in that direction a lot. And if I look at their cornerback, their number one cornerback relative to our number one receiver, how do I like that one-on-one matchup? I'm not sure that I do. I think I like the Florida cornerback. And so when we're forcing the ball to Mechie, we're forcing the ball into that type of coverage or that type of defense. And so it makes me wonder, could we have done better in going in different parts of the field? Could we have attacked different parts of the field? Maybe let's run some nines with Mechie to take Elam out of the play so that we could work the other sort of three quarters of the field. I think that's something that we could have looked at. But the thought there is that, you know, Mechie entered last season as the number three behind Waddle and Devontae. And the season behind that, he was the number five running back. So he's gone from 3 to 5 to 1. And has he topped out? Is he truly a number one receiver? Not mad at the guy. I love him. I think he's really talented. But in terms of he can get, is he a guy that can get open against anyone in a critical situation? I don't know that we've seen that. Certainly not historically, because he hasn't been asked to do that. But Saturday, he was asked to do it. And 6 catches for 49 yards is what you get. Is that what we need? 6 catches for 90 and a touch would be more representative of what we would want out of that position. So there's still opportunity for him to improve, and there's still opportunity for the play around him to improve. But that's going to be something to watch. I think, actually, you know, in response to that, I think we need to see more JoJo Earl. I think we need to see more Ajay Hall. I think we need to find difference makers on our existing roster. You know, we don't have to look far. Julio Jones, Amari Cooper, Calvin Ridley, Devonta Smith, freshmen can be difference makers, significant difference makers at that position. JoJo Earl, Ajay Hall, amongst others, I think they should get an audition at, can you be the number one guy? Can we count on you at least situationally to help us find a matchup so that you can be our go-to receiver? That's not in place of Mechie. That's in addition to Mechie. If they're on the field and they're beating their guys, then that makes it easier for Mechie to beat his guy. Maybe they move their number one corner to one of these guys, completely shut them down, and that opens up Mechie. We need to make a conflict for the defense, for the defensive coordinator. And right now, I don't think Alabama receivers are providing that. I think the talent is on the roster to do it. We just need to invest into that talent so they get more experience quicker, so that they can develop. I think also, stop me if you've heard this before, I think the offensive line has a role here. If we're getting pressure on the quarterback and Bryce can't set his feet and survey the field and wait for these longer breaking routes to develop, then they never will. And that's something that that needs to be addressed. I do think, before we wrap up offense, if we don't solve for offensive line, if Alabama doesn't solve for the offensive line, I think we drop 2 games this season. There you go. Mini game ball. I'm giving mini game ball to Robbie Outs. He's a true freshman. He's played some at tight end and halfback. But if you're watching the game, you most likely saw him as a fullback. And so in goal line situations, he's lined up as a fullback. It's something else we sort of predicted or wished for or hoped for in the preseason. Like I said, there's still a lot of value in that preseason show in terms of the roster and such. We're seeing things materialize almost weekly that we talked about or forecasted. And Robbie Outs at a fullback position is certainly something that we saw. It's a little bit of a throwback, a little bit of an old school type of formation and play. But I think that he is that character. I think he has that sort of persona. I think he has that sort of – that is in his game. That's in his wheelhouse. We've taken defensive linemen and brought them over for their heft, their size, and their physicality. But they're just running forward and blocking someone. I think Outs, I think that's who he is. I think he is a fullback and a halfback and a tight end. And so I look forward to increased roles, increased opportunities for him to get the ball. Again, offensive line. But I think we've got a lot of wrinkles that we can sort of layer in some goal line situations that we could see something happen there. So mini game ball for Robbie Outs in that regard. All right, so let's flip the field and let's talk defense. All right, so I want to get into our defense, and there's a lot of things that I want to touch upon from a defensive perspective. But what I need to do, what we really, really need to do as Alabama fans, we need to take pause, and we need to recognize Dan Mullen is just a tactician. There's a lot of sort of goofy things that he does. You know, Darth Vader thing last year is an example, and there's others. I think Florida fans even sort of acknowledge, yeah, it seems there's some weird stuff, but if you just stick to the X's and O's and just the tactician that he is as an offensive play caller or really an offensive designer, there's a lot to like. And so if you think about the last three games now, you know, Dan is now 0 for 11 in his last 11 games, or I guess that's all time, coaching against Saban. But if you look at the last three games, he seems to be sort of demystifying, and he could very well be 3-0 in those last three games. Obviously, Saturday's game could have gone a different way, and I think it's fair to say that Dan did a lot of really good things with their offense. Even call it a limited offense with the quarterback, the way that they stuck to sort of the speed option. There was a lot of good there from their side. And I just like sort of the tenacity, the will that their team brought to the table. It wasn't just Emory Jones. It was the entire roster. Everyone was keyed up for the game and played well, played appropriate. And that's a hats off to Mullen in that regard. If we go back to the last time we played Florida in the SEC championship game, 2020, obviously they had an entirely different roster. So did Alabama. And that game went down to the wire. And I think for Alabama fans, that game was a little bit of a surprise, too. I think Alabama fans, if they were truly honest, would have thought both of these games would have been 14-point games. And they were both very, very close. Actually, both games, ironically, if you will, both games Florida had ball in hand as the clock went out or expired, with a chance to win the game. And actually both ended up in a quarterback sack or a quarterback tackle. But nonetheless, both of those two games were an opportunity where Florida could have won the game. And if things had unfolded just a little bit differently in the game, they would have. And if you reach back just a little bit further, 2017 at Mississippi State, this was the Nick Fitzgerald game. And this is where Jalen Hurts threw a touchdown to Smitty with just a couple of minutes left in the game. And that was the differential to win the game. So the last three games that Alabama or Saban has coached against Dan Mullen, they all three came down to very, very late in the game. They were all three games where it felt like Alabama could have or should have had a bigger margin, a bigger lead. And in all three instances, Dan Mullen and his squad almost won the game. Again, just a little sort of wrinkle of differential, and Alabama fans are lamenting the fact that that we're 0-3 against Mullen in the last three games. It's you know, luck and circumstances and turns of fate that it goes the other way, and we should not take that for granted, especially if we play Florida later this season. Dan Mullen, you know, a lot of fans will probably twist this the wrong way. He said in his presser, "Man, I hope we play them again. I hope we play them again soon." Well, let's not get too worked up around that. There's something called the physics of the SEC schedule that indicate the only way that Alabama would ever face Florida again. I guess there's three ways that could happen. The only way we could do that is in the postseason, SEC championship game being the most obvious. But there are avenues where we could face them in the playoffs. And so if I'm Florida, of course I want to play Alabama again, because the only way physically that can happen is nets out to be a pretty good situation for Florida. I would want, if I were Florida, I'd want to play Alabama again too, because they beat Alabama 3 out of 4 quarters, and I know they'd love to play that first quarter again. I know that they would. And if they're playing Alabama later in the season in a championship-type environment, a postseason-type environment, then we better watch out, because they're going to be a different team, because they're going to have access to another quarterback. As well as Emory Jones took care of his business, they're going to be a better team by virtue of increased confidence and by virtue of having another weapon at the quarterback position. So all of that I sort of brand under the defense, because, damn it, this Alabama defense has room to grow, and it's going to need to grow significantly to keep pace with what Florida may have for us later in the season if they get their wish, which is to play Alabama again. I think as I sit here, I don't know that I want to play Florida again. The alternative is Georgia, but I don't know that I want to face Florida a second time. I think I'd rather play Georgia for the first time than Florida for the second time, for all the reasons that we've talked about. Defense. I want to talk about play calling just a little bit. And I want to sort of rope this more towards the defensive front. I thought our defensive front played well, and there were some standout individual performances. But I think across the board, Alabama needed to provide more pressure up front. I think there was a need for a greater rotation across the defensive line. And we're going to come back to that. But we've talked about the defensive line. Damn, that preseason show. We talked about the defensive line being having enough depth that itself could be a weapon for the defense. And so we needed to see more of that against Florida on what was just a blistering, sort of humid day, just a depressing sort of weight on the players, especially the big guys up front. I think some additional rotation there really could have benefited. I think Brian Young, I don't think he played Byron Young, I don't think he played as much as he probably could have, and as much as his contribution suggested. I think when he came in at times, he looked really fresh, and he was a contributor. DJ Dale and Tim Smith, now they rotated a lot at the nose position, so that was good to see. And both of them put up some pretty good numbers. And so that speaks to, if we can continue to sort of leverage and get fresh bodies and fresh legs across the defensive front, I think that that could have benefited the Alabama defense. Phil Mathis, probably as quiet as ever, he recorded or contributed in on 7 tackles, which was impressive. But I think this unit, I think this defensive front for Alabama has more to give. And I would have liked to have seen the play calling and personnel packages really sort of invest into the defensive line Saturday against Florida. I think that could have made a big difference. Let's hit some individuals. Toa, you know, he had 9 tackles, but there were times where, there were times where he seemed physically outmatched, which might have been a little bit surprising. I know that he's our play caller. I know that he's a really good player. I know that he's capable of playing, you know, sideline to sideline, but he seemed a little undersized against Florida's physical running game. Now, against other teams, against Ole Miss in a couple weeks, he's going to be the perfect player. Against Florida, in more of a physical front, a physical attack, he might have been a little outmatched. He might have been a little overmatched physically. I would have liked to have seen Jalen Moody's physicality in the game a little bit more. Again, I know we're talking a play caller here. We need to be careful about that. But is there a sub package, or is there an opportunity to rotate in to give the offense different looks across the linebacker group? And I think there is. And in fact, Jalen Moody lined up at nose on the last play of the game, and he's responsible for the tackle. It was across the line of scrimmage, so it was a tackle and not a sack. But he brought down Emory Jones to end the game. And about the time I saw him in there, he was making that play. And I think we've talked about before, he seems bigger. He seems more physical, certainly compared to Hank. And so I'd like to see him get into that rotation. I like Christian Harris. I like that we have three guys in the middle that can play well and compete. I'd like to see us rotate those three guys and not just play two and then bring in one sort of in mop-up duty. DeMarco Hellams, man, this kid's going to get more grief than he probably needs to. He had 11 tackles on the day, and damn it, we just needed him to make one more. We needed him to make the tackle on third down on the 99-yard drive. And if he makes that play, if he makes that tackle, they're short of the first down. Florida they're going to have to punt because they're still in the shadow of their own end zone. And instead, they continue to possess the ball, continue to wear down the Alabama defense. And, of course, they go 99 yards for a touchdown. So I would have liked to have seen DeMarco make just one more play. And I'm not piling on the guy because clearly he knows that. And he otherwise had a really good day with 11 tackles or in on 11 tackles. Jalen Amore Davis, he had an interception. Overall, I think the cornerbacks played well, probably better than just the gameplay would suggest. If you watch the game, it seemed like, man, they're always completing that pass, that pass on that third down. And you sort of translate that to the cornerbacks. I thought the cornerbacks played okay. Maybe it's a little bit of rust for having been off last week, but maybe there's an opportunity for some open competition there with McKinstry. We'll see. But overall, I thought the corners were not as bad as sort of the play, the gameplay suggested. And Jalen Amore Davis getting an interception certainly is good. Drew Sanders, just want to give a hats off to Drew Sanders. He had six tackles. Tackle for loss in a quarterback hurry. He's one of those guys we've talked about before. He's getting better before our eyes. Every week, he's getting better. And other players and coaches are saying really positive things about Drew Sanders. And I think he is going to continue to develop into just an outstanding player. I like him more, you know, forward motion as opposed to backing into coverage when he is in coverage, and we're comfortable letting him do that. So that speaks to some capability and certainly his athleticism. But I think when he plays sort of nose forward as opposed to stepping backwards, he is a better player. But Drew Sanders, number 20 defensive end, he's going to be our outside linebacker. He's going to certainly be a player to watch because he is getting better and better every week. We see him growing before our eyes. He's getting increasingly comfortable. All the sort of the phrases, the buzz phrases that we say to describe a player, Drew Sanders is clicking all of those boxes, and that's fun and exciting to see. All right, so we got this far into the defense, and we've really not talked about who I would characterize as sort of the hero of the day. Now, I'll be honest, politically correctly, I don't know if you're allowed to call people heroes anymore. I think nurses and teachers and grocery store workers are sort of the heroes of the day. And I say that a little jokingly, but nonetheless, the hero of the day for Alabama defense, let's define it down so we don't offend anyone, is clearly Will Anderson, a player that we did not know as a fan base whether or not he would even be healthy enough to play given his injury against Mercer. And what does Will do? He comes out with seven tackles, two tackles for loss, a quarterback hurry, and is so just spent, so just exhausted at the end of the play that he is like practically carried off the field. Saban is asked in the post-game press conference, is Will Anderson okay? And Saban goes, yes, of course he's okay. He just, you know, was very sort of demonstrative in saying that he was okay. He was not helped off the field. And he kind of was. And so was he not helped off the field because of injury? He was helped off the field because of exhaustion. I think that's the point that Saban is making. And I'll give him margin for that. But he was just so physically spent at the end of the game that there was some assistance needed. And so I think, you know, on the flight back to Tuscaloosa, Will, can we carry your bags? Enjoy your complimentary upgrade to first class. Hot towel, sir? Yes. Would you like two? Can I pour you a bourbon from the pilot's private collection? If we're not doing that on the flight back, then we're not doing this right, because Will Anderson absolutely was a hero Saturday, and he needed the royal treatment on the way home. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And in fact, we talked about Will practically being carried off the field. He's not injured. He was so spent. Saban, I'm coming for you in the wrap-up segment. We're going to talk about that a little bit. In terms of defense, mini game ball, I'm going Jalen Moody. I'm going to go two players, so I'm going to break the mini game ball just a little bit. We're going to go Jalen Moody for all the reasons that we've just talked about, and we're going to go LeBrian Ray. And so I'm going to have a little bit of a sentimental angle. Dude has just been so dinged up and injured and has not played yet this season. However, he did play Saturday against Florida. From my TV set, I didn't see when he was in. I did see that he registered a tackle, and so that's good. And so just sentimentally, I feel good about LeBrian Ray getting into the game. And I tell you what, if he can play and be healthy and be sort of a representative version of himself, we talked last week about him maybe being one of the puzzle pieces that can alleviate if Will Anderson isn't able to play. Well, guess what? He can alleviate if we need to give Will Anderson some rest so that Will can be more effective on the plays that he plays. And so if LeBrian Ray gets, you know, 3 to 5 to 6 snaps that otherwise are going to Will at points in the game, then that's certainly something that I think is going to benefit LeBrian, and it's going to benefit Will, and in turn, it's going to benefit the defense as a whole. So those are my mini game balls. Special teams, I don't necessarily have a lot to say about special teams. I would say kickoffs, take the ball where you give it. And if you have any, take the ball where they'll give it to you. If you have any questions about that, ask Arizona State what they think. Will Reichert, only one field goal, and it was a 24-yarder, but he had 4 PATs. And so sort of the buzz around Will is he's perfect on his kicks, because he went perfect last week. And our last season, which truly is impressive. I don't minimize that, to go perfect on a season. He missed one last week, which is a little disappointing. And so there's a rush for him to have another streak. I understand that. Dude's a damn good kicker, and we're glad to have him booting the ball for us. James Burnup, our very own Aussie kicker, punted, was it 3 or 4 times, more than we would have liked. And he was 42 and a half yards as his average. His last punt, and this was interesting, you know, have to get sort of a kicking sort of coaching expert on here to sort of straighten this out. But his last punt, I was so excited to say, oh, and his last punt was the longest, was the best, because that's when we were punting the ball away with just so little time on the clock, and we want to back Florida up as far as possible. And I looked in the stat, and I was like, oh, that's so disappointing. He had a 34-yarder on the last one. You think, oh, that's when you want 60. And then I started to look at it. I was like, oh, let's think about this a little bit. And so Florida took possession of the ball at the 23. And so from where they, you know, so 34 yards from where they were, they, you know, get the ball at the 23. And I'm thinking, well, there's sort of a sweet spot there. If you can get them inside the 25, then that's a win. Now, closer to the goal line, the better. But if he had done a longer kick, then there's a greater likelihood that it could have outkicked the coverage, which is an expression, or it could have just rolled into the end zone, and then they would have brought it out to the 25 just anyway. So the 23, 25 is not that big of a difference, but I think it was more about let's kick the ball in the air so we can cover the hell out of that ball. Let's worry less about, you know, booting it, moonshots, and let's just get down there and tackle the football toting Jesse there so that so they don't, you know, break one off on us. And so I think that went into that last kick being his shortest, and that's going to pull down the average too. He was at 42 and a half, including a 34-yarder. And so I think across the board, he punted well and did what we needed situationally. And so his other punts are going to be longer, and where we need him to place the ball right there so that we can converge and cover, he delivered in that regard. So I thought that was really good. All right, next up. So it turns out next week we play Southern Miss in Tuscaloosa. And I'm going to tell you, I don't care that we play Southern Miss. And I don't care what the score is, so long as we have more runs than they do. What I do care about, and I'm looking at you, Coach, I said I was coming, is loosening up the bench. Let's not tighten up and play a short bench. Let's loosen it up and let's play more players. Let's audition for roles. Let's go shopping for talent on our own roster. Let's find our right tackle. I think, I'll help you with the easy ones, I think it's J.C. Latham. Let's find a difference maker wide receiver. I think it's probably JoJo and or a Jay Hall. I think there's a lot of dynamic plays that we could run with both of them on the field. Show me more of this two tight end set. Let's see what we can do with Robbie Outs. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And so let's not have a sort of a play count, a tick count, a short bench. Let's open it up and let's see. Let's audition for some opportunities here. Let's audition for some roles Saturday. And if that means we have some learning curves against Southern Miss, then let's have learning curves against Southern Miss and not against Ole Miss. Let's get the right miss for our misses. That probably sounded different than I wanted it, but we're tracking. Let's find an outside linebacker or a defensive end that we can sub in for Anderson. And we've talked about that. Is it Dallas? Is it Cano Knott? Is it an extra defensive tackle so we can be more physical up front because we have the horses for that? Is it a LeBrian Ray? Let's find a role for Jalen Moody. We've talked about this. Let's rotate him in with the others. Let's find a role for Jalen Moody. Maybe he steps in. Last week, we thought maybe Christian Harris. Maybe it's Moody lining up a couple snaps on the outside and just saying sick him on playing some containment and playing some Will Anderson. Maybe Moody's physical enough to do that. Let's find a platoon maybe with Helms and Malachi Moore. I get it. I get the numbers. But when we see Battle and Helms at safety, and I want them both out there, and we've got Amar Davis and Job at corner, well, I like that. And we've got Brian Branch as the star. I don't necessarily want to take any of those guys off the field, but I want to get me some Malachi Moore on the field too. And so last year, we platooned DeMarco Helms and Daniel Wright. Well, maybe we do some platooning with Daniel Helms or with DeMarco Helms and Malachi Moore. And guess what? That's a better platoon because Helms is a better player this year than last year, and Malachi Moore is an upgrade from Daniel Wright, I think, at that position. And so let's see if we can work some platoon in there, and maybe we find the situation like we had against Florida where it's Malachi in there, a fresher Malachi in there, and he makes that play that an exhausted Helms was unable to make. Maybe, or vice versa, a more rested Helms makes that play because he gave some snaps earlier in the game to Malachi. In either case, we need something. And what we need, I think, is on our roster. We just need to go shopping on our own roster. And there's certainly an opportunity to do that. And against Southern Miss, against the Golden Eagles, that's when we need to do this. And so Saturday's game could be super exciting from the standpoint of we do a lot of things with our roster and we check out a lot of things with our roster. Do we do that? Will we do that? I have a hard time thinking that we do. Do we need to do it? Absolutely, 100%. And hopefully I've not mixed that message in today's podcast. All right, one more sort of footnote that I want to cover. I absolutely hate to cover this one. And Chip, I know that's going to make you happy. And I say that with all sort of respect, and I'm grinning a little bit myself. But in our Zoom call sort of prediction, score prediction, I have to give it to Chip. He went 35-28, and boy, Chip was sour Saturday, and I love you, buddy. But he absolutely called it a close game. He absolutely expressed concern over the state of the team. He was reading the team's mail Saturday on the Zoom call. And if you have an opportunity to go back and listen to that, if you have an opportunity to join us on a Zoom call, we absolutely want you to do that. If you want to do that, but you don't know how to do it, check out the Alabama Football Podcast email at gmail.com or just alabamafootballpodcast.com. And there's some information there. But Chip predicted 35-28. So we predicted within a touchdown. We were even closer than that. He was actually more right directionally. And boy, you should have seen some of the other scores. I thought, and others, that we were really going to lay some wood to Florida. And it started out that way, but it did not end that way. And so Chip, you've heard me reference him before because he asked a really great question that we addressed in our mailbag, which is another one of our good preseason shows. He talked about leaders on the team. And so I'm bullish on the fact that there are leaders on the team. I just don't think they've developed to the point. And so I think Chip and I are coming at this from different angles. I think he'd probably agree with some of the positions and the names and the players, but we're not seeing it. And I thought we would get them into those positions and that they would execute in those positions faster than they have. And the reality is we haven't gotten that. Now, do we get that Saturday? Was Saturday in sort of that swampy mess and heat and humidity and close game, was that sort of the environment, the concoction that sort of gives life to leadership across Alabama or sort of unlocks it? And they come back to Tuscaloosa, a different team, a team that is that's going to step up into the roles, that's going to take practice, that's going to take treatment, that's going to take everything serious. I think we saw Will Anderson demonstrate that. I think there are other players, Bryce and others, that are demonstrating characteristics. I think we need the team as a whole to sort of embrace that, to embody that. If we look just across the field Saturday, Florida was an outmatched team. I believe that. However, they bought in and they gave it all they had on the field. And on the field Saturday, for vast portions of the game, they were the better team. They were. And I think if we have a little bit of that heart and spirit, if Alabama can translate some of that heart and spirit into their play, then I think this team can be special. If they can't, and if we don't fix the offensive line, then we've got two losses coming to us. So buckle up. All right. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.